Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a close look at a really pivotal case, Downs v. Bidwell. It's from 1901.
Right. And it still really shapes how we think about the Constitution applying, you know, beyond state borders. Super relevant for anyone studying law.
Absolutely. Especially when you think about how law applies more broadly. So this case came about after the Spanish-American War, right? The U.S. acquired Puerto Rico.
Exactly. And then Congress passed the 4-Acre Act, which put import taxes on goods coming from Puerto Rico into the U.S. mainland.
And that's where Samuel Downs comes in. He was a merchant.
Yeah, New York merchant.
Yeah.
He got a shipment of oranges from Puerto Rico and was taxed. He challenged it, said it was unconstitutional.
Okay, so what was the core constitutional question here?
It really boiled down to Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, the Uniformity Clause.
Which says duties and taxes have to be uniform throughout the United States.
Precisely. So Downs argued, hey, Puerto Rico's under U.S. control as part of the United States. For this clause, these taxes aren't uniform, so they're illegal. Pretty direct argument.
Seems straightforward on the surface. So this set up a real clash. You've got the Uniformity Clause on one side.
Yeah.
And on the other, the government treating Puerto Rican goods differently. What was the government's thinking?
Well, their argument was that constitutionally, territories weren't necessarily the same as states. They felt Congress had the power to govern these new places differently.
So the idea was that the Constitution didn't just like automatically switch on everywhere the flag went.
That seems to be the gist of it. They argued for flexibility in governing territories.
And Downs' side was pushing back, saying, no, U.S. control means full constitutional protection, equal treatment.
Right. No second-class status for territories under the American flag.
Exactly. Which, you know, leads to that fundamental question. Can the U.S. have territories where the Constitution doesn't fully apply, where people or goods get less protection?
A huge question. And it landed right in the Supreme Court's lap. Let's get into their reasoning. Justice Brown wrote the majority opinion. Yes, Justice Brown. And he introduced this really crucial distinction between incorporated and unincorporated territories.
Okay, break that down for us. Incorporated territories.
Those were the ones clearly on a path to statehood. Think Arizona, New Mexico back then. Brown said, for those territories, yes, the Constitution applies fully. They're incorporated into the U.S. proper.
Got it. Envisioned as future states, so unincorporated.
That's where he put Puerto Rico at the time.
Wait.
For these unincorporated territories, Brown argued the Constitution didn't automatically apply in full.
Wow. So Congress could pick and choose which parts applied.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
Congress could selectively extend constitutional provisions. This was a major departure from the idea that rights follow the flag automatically.
That's a pretty significant carve out. Yeah. What was the justification? Why not just say it applies everywhere?
Well, Justice Brown looked at history. He pointed to the Louisiana Purchase, arguing that even back then, the Constitution wasn't just fully switched on overnight in that vast new territory.
Mm-hmm. Using historical precedent to say automatic extension wasn't intended.
Right. That was a key part of the majority's rationale.
Now, there was also a concurring opinion from Justice White. He agreed with the result, but had a slightly different take.
Yeah, Justice White focused more on Congress's broad power over territories under Article 4 of the Constitution. He saw that as the source of authority for treating territories differently.
So congressional power was his main focus.
It was. But, and this is really important, White also made it clear that fundamental rights still applied. Things like due process.
Okay. So even in an unincorporated territory, there was a baseline of rights. It wasn't a constitutional free-for-all.
Exactly. Even under the majority's framework, certain fundamental protections were considered inherent. That nuance is key.
That is important. So Puerto Rico wasn't part of the United States for tax uniformity, but its people still had some basic constitutional rights.
What about the dissent? I imagine they weren't happy with this framework. Not at all. You had Chief Justice Fuller and Justice Harlan writing very strong dissents. Their core argument was simple. The Constitution follows the flag, period.
No ifs, ands, or buts. Wherever the U.S. governs, the Constitution applies fully.
That was their stance. They believed in universal application within U.S. sovereignty.
And Chief Justice Fuller specifically warned about the consequences of the majority's ruling.
He did. He was really concerned about creating two different systems of American governance, one for states with full rights, and another for territories, potentially with fewer rights. He saw that as dangerous.
Undermining equality before the law, essentially.
That was his fear.
Yeah.
And Justice Harlan's dissent is probably the most quoted.
What did he say?
He powerfully stated that the U.S. operates under its constitution at any time or at any place where its sovereignty extends. A direct hit on the majority's idea that constitutional reach could be limited by geography or status.
At any time or at any place. That's a strong statement. Still resonates.
Absolutely. It's often brought up in these debates even today.
So after Downs, what was the actual legal test, if any, for how the Constitution applied in territories? Was it just this incorporated, unincorporated label?
Well, the court didn't lay out like a neat 5-point test. But certain factors emerged as important.
Such as?
Things like, what did Congress intend for the territory? Was statehood the goal? That pointed towards incorporation. Also, how had territories been treated historically? And, as Justice White emphasized, that baseline of fundamental rights was always considered applicable.
Okay, so a combination of factors, not a rigid rule, but anchored by fundamental rights. In this case, Downs, it's part of a larger group, right? The insular cases.
Exactly. It's really a cornerstone of the insular cases.
Hmm.
That whole series of decisions around the turn of the 20th century dealt with the status of territories acquired after the Spanish-American War, Puerto Rico, the Philippines, Guam.
And these cases together kind of defined this unique, sometimes ambiguous relationship.
They really did. And the consequences of the Downs decision, this incorporated, unincorporated doctrine, are still very much with us.
What are those long-term impacts?
Well, the most direct one is that residents in current unincorporated territories like Puerto Rico, Guam, American Samoa, the U.S. Virgin Islands, they don't have the full set of constitutional rights that state residents do.
Including things like voting in presidential elections.
Right. And no voting representation in Congress. These are major limitations stemming directly from that distinction made back in 1901. It's, you know, a constant source of legal and political debate.
It really created this situation where American citizenship means different things depending on where you live geographically.
Precisely, which kind of runs counter to the idea of universal rights often associated with the Constitution. It raises ongoing questions about fairness and equality.
Definitely. So looking back at the decision itself, there's this tension. Was the court just being pragmatic, dealing with the realities of expansion, or was it fundamentally compromising core principles?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? You can see the majority potentially worrying about, you know, the practical difficulties of instantly applying every single constitutional provision to vastly different cultures and economies. Practical governance concerns.
Okay, maybe concerns about disruption.
Perhaps. But then you have the dissenters.
Who saw a much bigger danger in creating different classes of constitutional application.
Exactly. They worried about the long-term inequality, the principle of the thing. And when you look at the ongoing debates today about territorial rights, you see their concerns weren't unfounded.
It forces us to ask some pretty fundamental questions. Can a democracy have territories where the full Constitution doesn't automatically reach? What are the limits on Congress when it comes to rights in these places?
Those are the critical questions Downs v. Bidwell leaves us grappling with. It's about the tension between expansion, governance, and the very meaning of constitutional rights.
So wrapping up, Downs v. Bidwell fundamentally established that incorporated and incorporated territory distinction.
Yes, and ruled that the uniformity clause didn't apply to Puerto Rico then because it was deemed unincorporated. It set the stage for how the U.S. would legally relate to its territories.
A hugely influential case.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And for anyone studying law, understanding Downs and the insular cases is crucial for grasping the ongoing discussions about the status and rights of people in U.S. territories today.
Definitely. And maybe a final thought to leave folks with, going back to Justice Harlan's dissent. Just reflecting on his idea that the Constitution should apply fully wherever the U.S. flag flies, what does it really mean for a system when that principle is debated, qualified, or even rejected for certain areas? Something important to think about.
A very important question indeed. Thanks for diving into this complex case today.
Thank you. It was a great discussion.